Welcome to Safety Spectrum, your environmental health and safety connection. This program is a presentation of the Michigan Safety Conference. For almost a century, the annual conference has provided credible educational opportunities and valuable support to the safety and health practitioner by offering 120 instructional programs along with exhibits highlighting the latest in safety equipment, instrumentation, and demonstration. To learn more about the conference, please find us at MICH safetyconference.org.
Welcome to the first ever Safety Spectrum podcast, and it is sponsored by the Michigan Safety Conference. I believe even before I moved to Michigan, I heard about the Safety Conference. It is an amazing collection of interesting minds who understand the theory and the practical aspects of safety in various areas. So today for our first podcast, we've picked Carl Granger, CSP, SMS. Hi, Carl.
Margarita.
He is the Director of Safety and Compliance for the Woods Construction Interiors in Sterling Heights, Michigan. And he's also the first winner of the Hayes Safety Award for Excellence. Congratulations, sir.
Thank you very much.
I heard you just won another award. What was the name of that?
The Mid-Michigan chapter of the American Society of Safety Professionals awarded me with Safety Professional of the Year this year.
Well, so, yeah. You deserve it. I call Carr the safety guru, the safety guy. He's amazing. He's also in several safety and trade associations, including ASSB, CAM, the Michigan Safety Conference, and the AGC of Michigan. Welcome, Carl. So let's just get started. The purpose of this podcast is to spread awareness and to educate on safety. So the topic today is construction, challenges of construction safety. What are the safety challenges on a construction worksite? What makes it uniquely hazardous?
That's a great question. So I think in any job, there's always going to be hazards. Within construction, I wouldn't say we necessarily have more of them, but they definitely could be more unique, and also they change day to day, whereas in a manufacturing environment, they're certainly going to have hazards, but hazards kind of stay the same. But on a construction site, you've got multiple trades doing different things, and those trades come and go as their scope of work starts and ends. You've got lots of moving parts, whether those parts are equipment moving across the construction site or materials. Lots of foot traffic. And I think, in some kinds of construction, ours included, we get to deal with both inside hazards, inside buildings and retail establishments and places like that, but also outside hazards. So things like, the weather can make a difference. There's certainly hazards that come with working when it's too hot or too cold, too windy. So it's just a variety of things. And that variety, I think, is what makes it very challenging.
I can imagine so, especially since you're sometimes dealing with new workers who join you on different sites in different states. So that's a lot to contend with. Well, what are ways that construction safety professionals mitigate those hazards?
Well, I think the first big challenge in mitigating or eliminating hazards is identifying them. So, we do a lot on the front end of a project to understand, where the hazards might exist. And then we teach our leadership teams and our workers, how to identify hazards and then what to do about it when they see something that just isn't right. So that see something, say something is very, very important in what we do. We do a lot of training to teach, what those hazards are, what to do about them. But more importantly is, how to not just add safety to what we're doing, but to find the best way to work safely. We want people to have a quality product when they finish. We want certainly to get as much done as possible. But the third leg of that stool is to find a way to do those things safely the first time. That way we don't have situations where we have injuries or incidents or equipment damage or building damage to deal with. So I don't know if I completely answered your question, but
I think you did. So what are some of the reasons why safety doesn't happen the way it's supposed to on a work site?
That's a really good question. And that's one we all answer every day. We can teach, our workers and our leaders, the right way to do something, right? So whether that's through teaching them how to put on fall protection the right way, how it's supposed to fit, how to properly operate equipment so it's safe and it's not, you know, you're not adding hazards. You know, but each person that comes to a job site comes with their own previous training. So whether that training on a forklift was somebody tossing them the keys and saying, okay, don't hit anything, or if they actually got some real life training on how to do things correctly. You know, what does OSHA say about how to operate a forklift? You know, how far do the forks have to go under the load? Those kinds of things all make a difference. And so each person that comes to a job site, if they're my workers, you know, we have some impact and some influence. If they're a subcontractor's workers, you know, it's a little more challenging. We certainly want them to either meet our level of safety expectation or exceed it. And if we come across a sub that, you know, has better safety rules than ours, we snatch them and steal them and make them ours. But, you know, there's a lot of difficulty, well, not difficulty, but it's a challenge, you know, to bring everybody up to the level where, you know, we've got safe work going on all the time. You know, just it's lots of people with lots of levels of experience and prior training, whether that training was good or bad. And we're trying to bring everybody up to the same level where we, you know, can work safely without having to worry about incidents and injuries.
So with all this issue of complacency, even though everyone understands compliance, how can we capture the attention of the team to stick to compliance and go beyond complacency?
That's the million-dollar question. I think the biggest thing is, you know, making sure we have good communication with our team leaders, our superintendents, our foremen, and also all of our workers across all the job sites. I think communication is key. You have to communicate the information that they need where they are and where it makes sense to them. So we got to make sure the communication strategy isn't just an email here or there. I'll give you a good example of one thing we're doing. I mentioned the pandemic earlier, and, you know, instead of just sending them our, you know, response plan and, you know, here's a list of symptoms to watch out for, you know, we've been doing weekly phone calls with everybody. Everybody's invited and we get, you know, varying levels of participation, but every Thursday I send a reminder out about Friday's call. It's a Zoom call that we've been doing since the end of March of last year. And they only take about a half an hour, but then we have every Friday, we have that half an hour call at the same time. We did skip Thanksgiving and Christmas, that those weeks we didn't have a call. But, you know, every week we do the same kind of call. We talk about the current messages from CDC and any updates and any other things we want, you know, to communicate. We just try to make it a little fun so it's worth listening to each week. And then we record that, and then that recording then gets out to our team, everybody in the company, the following Tuesday. And we've maintained that sort of communication strategy as a way to have multiple touch points. So again, getting them the information live, if they can attend live, and then sending the recording out if they can't attend. And we get a lot of great questions each week from people out in the field, whether they're currently working with us or hoping to be working with us soon as we start to ramp up, you know, later this spring and early summer. So I think communication is key. You have to make sure people hear a consistent message, and it's one that makes sense to them where they are.
I like your strategy with your weekly calls of continuing to reach out with emails, and your calls are video calls, but just using the auditory, which means that anyone in the field can access it easily. So I think that's a brilliant strategy. Although I'm sure everyone misses seeing each other, you can't stop everything sometimes to have a video call. So with bandwidth the way it is, so that's brilliant. So what can each of us do to promote a culture of safety?
Well, I think the biggest thing is individually, we're responsible for our own safety. So, I mean, that's a realization that's important to make. The Dirty Jobs guy, Mike Rowe, has a saying, safety third. And the reason he says, because, you know, safety first, that's great. And it sounds good on paper. And even, you know, we can preach it and teach it. But his comment is safety third. No matter what kind of safety rules we put into place, or, you know, even disciplinary actions for not doing things safely, each person really is responsible for their own well-being. I can't sit over everybody's shoulder all day long on all 40 or 50 of our job sites and make sure people are making the right decisions. So we do our best to teach the information, and then we make sure we empower and teach, you know, in a way that empowers our workers to, you know, make that safety conscious decision whenever the need arises. You know, at some point they're going to be on, you know, have to get up on a roof, and we want to make sure that, you know, they have the tools and equipment, but also to do that safely, whether that's a rope grab and a harness, or, you know, some kind of a way to stay away from the edge. But they have to be willing to do that, and they have to understand why it's important. And I think that's the key. So what can each of us do? I think watching for hazards in our own personal environments, but then you have to take that to the next step and make sure that we're making the decision that keeps us safe. And recognizing that if we do X, Y, or Z and take that risk and accept that risk, that something bad could happen, and then just make the decision that keeps us safe and keeps, you know, our friends, family, or coworkers safe as well.
I think that's good. And one of the things that I see that erodes safety is fatigue and lack of sleep and all that. What do you say about that? How can we keep sharp so that we are not only having the right tools and all the information, but use them regularly and wisely?
That's a good question. I think, you know, maintaining a healthy state of mind is important. And I think that's been extra tricky during the pandemic, with so many people having to adjust everything they do to, you know, work at home or maybe not work, and try and figure out what else to do to, you know, to stay focused. But I think, you know, it's all the normal things that we would hear from our doctor during our annual physical, right? Get good sleep, you know, make sure we're eating healthy, getting some exercise, which I need to do more of. You know, those kinds of things, I think, help us stay sharp. Within the realm of safety, you know, we want to make sure we're, you know, as safety professionals, we stay on top of any rule changes that might be, you know, coming or have changed, you know, without us catching it, so that we can make sure we're up as up to date as possible. And then we can pass on, you know, either that new rule or those new best practices, you know, to our workers or friends. So.
Well, I think that's wonderful. All right. So as a member of the board of the Michigan Safety Conference, I know that you love to brag about the upcoming April conference. So here's your chance to brag. Why should everyone attend it?
Yeah, I've been involved with Michigan Safety Conference for several years, and it's a great organization. It's all volunteer. We get together several times a year, and you know, we have a great champion in Denise McGinn, who yes. really leads us, you know, forward as a group of volunteers who, you know, it's like herding cats kind of. But you know, the conference this year is going to be virtual, which is something brand new for us. But I think we've kind of got a plan in place where it's not going to feel like just a bunch of, you know, Brady Bunch boxes on a Zoom screen. It's going to feel a little bit more personal with regards to the speakers. It is April 13th and 14th, so it's coming up pretty soon. And registration is open currently. There's also a half-day professional development conference on April 12th. So that's the Monday prior to the conference. And it's going to be a great session. It's a half day session in the afternoon. It's on ethics and the roles and rules and tools of diversity and inclusion. We've got a great speaker for that. The conference itself, the Tuesday and Wednesday of that week, there's going to be over 120 classes, you know, a bunch of exhibitors, over 200 exhibitors in our virtual expo area where you know, people can go in and check. It's not going to be the same as, you know, maybe shaking a hand at an in-person venue, but there's going to be opportunities for networking in lounge, you know, in the lounges where you can, you know, meet up, you know, as part of divisions classes or with the vendors. So I think it's going to feel as close to an in-person conference as you can do when you're, you know, still sitting at home with your pajama pants on, but it's going to be a great event. I help co-lead the industrial division, and we've got some just excellent speakers this year. So I encourage everybody to sign up and attend. If you can attend the Monday event as well, great. But for sure, check out the conference. The one really cool part, as much as, you know, being virtual isn't as fun as being in person, but the one cool part about being virtual this year is that most of the classes, not all of them, but most of them will be available after the conference for 2 weeks. So if a person is, you know, there to get CEU points, this year actually offers the opportunity to get more CEU points than a person would be able to get in a normal in-person conference. So that's really cool. You know, as much as being virtual and sitting at home watching a screen isn't as fun as being in person, I think this you know, conference will be as close as we can get to that kind of feel. And I'm looking forward to it. I think it's gonna be a great event.
Yeah, I am too. And certainly Denise and the Michigan Safety Conference team have been working hard, and they have some brilliant ideas and some brilliant people. It's MICH, M-I-C-H, safetyconference.org. And I think everyone would do well to register for that event. So we're at the close of our podcast. Any final thoughts or takeaways that you want to share with our listeners?
You know, I just want to wish everybody, you know, a happy week, a better weekend. And I'm looking forward to spring with everybody else. I think I'm done with winter. I'm also looking forward to the point in time when we can look back on the pandemic and take our best practices and things that worked and things that didn't, and catalog them for, you know, at some point in the future, we may have to dig them back out. But I'm looking forward to getting back to normal. So I wish everybody a healthy and safe day.
Well, that's lovely. Well, Carl Granger, as always, I think you're terrific. You and Woods Construction do, I think, such a good job with leading the safety effort with COVID. So I'm grateful, and I know many people are. So on behalf of everyone, including the Michigan Safety Conference, we're all grateful that you can join us for our first podcast. And be well, and please thank everyone at Woods for us for their good efforts as well.
I will do. Thank you, Margarita. Have a great day.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye. This is Dr. Margarita Gurry, and we're signing off.